sheep have two wishes, to get out or die, don't they?
We've had so many setbacks, and the struggle that we've faced, like, to get to where we are. Good food is nutritious, and you've got to listen to your body. Whatever you put into your body, there's a story behind it.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 329 of Meet the Farmers. I'm your host, Ben Eagle. Today, we are in one of my favourite counties, Somerset, and I am joined by Sarah and Georgia Weatherlake, who farm 500 acres, having taken over the business in 2023, following the death of Sarah's husband, Mark. They've been working on restoring the farm's grasslands, opening up woodland areas, and making the most of SFI, cattle grants, improving fencing and infrastructure. The farm also has a CHP, combined heat and power plant, and Sarah has lots of ideas for how to make best use of this. In fact, lots of ideas generally for the future of the business. The farm has a deer processing unit. That's a separate business. It's located within Exmoor National Park. So we're going to be asking what the challenges are of growing a business regeneratively within the national park. We'll be talking about the national park generally as well. Sarah and Georgia, welcome to Meet the Farmers.
Hello.
Hi, Ben.
It's good to have you on. Let's set the scene, first of all. So, Sarah, before we get into the detail, can you just describe the farm, first of all, where you are, what you're doing, and what makes it special, I suppose, for you?
It's mixed grassland and woodland. It's about 500 acres. It starts at about 1,400 foot, and we're about 700 foot, so it's got a lot of weather challenges. We have a fair amount of north-facing grassland, which also isn't ideal, but it works for us. We are intending to do more regenerative farming techniques with cattle that we haven't done before. The farm has been not productive for at least, I would say, 30 years. Mark originally had the farm back in the 70s, but he stopped the interest in farming and just we did set aside and grass keep. But now we're taking it back in hand and actually going to farm it. And I'm looking forward to having our own Ruby Devon cattle in, well, I keep saying this year, but this keeps going on a little bit further. No, we're definitely having them.
And potentially sheep.
Following on with sheep, but probably not our own, because the sheep have two wishes, to get out or die, don't they?
this is very true.
But we have lots of fencing with the capital grants. Because we have virtually no stock-proof fencing, we've now sort of ring-fenced areas, and we're now gently going forward with that. So it's all steadily happening, which has been great help.
Yeah, and I mean, you have sort of gone for this with great gusto, and you've got lots of ideas for the future as well. As a path so far, and as a decision to go ahead and do everything you're doing, what's that been like? Because it feels like it must have been in at the deep end to a certain extent.
I have, I've got absolutely no knowledge on farming at all. I'm just what I've picked up is what I want to do with it and how I see the farm going forward and listening to it. You know that farming has got to be productive. It's got to pay for itself. And that's the biggest challenge, is making it actually pay rather than be just sustained.
And Georgia, from your point of view, what's it like to see, I suppose, the farm really coming to life in a new direction?
Oh, God, it's been incredible. I mean, we've had so many setbacks, and the struggle that we've faced, like, to get to where we are, is, it's just like, you just look back and you're just like, how have we done that? Like, how have we got through it? But I mean, looking for the future, just thinking about the ideas of what we can make from the farm, can just get so excited.
We did have a big challenge from Capital Grants when Mark died, the farm was in his name, and then obviously it then came into my name. And then the Capital Grants people went, no, you can't have any money. And we went, but we've done all this work in this last 6 months. And they were going, nope, we're not going to give you anything. In fact, we're going to call for the money we've given you to come back. So that.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, that was a biggie. But we've actually got over that. We've gone back to the right side of Capital Grants, and we're SFIing and getting all that's available for us. Which, we've done that, I think, with a lot of hoops to jump through.
Yeah. Well, I mean, being within the national park on that front, is that a benefit at all in terms of access to grants?
I don't think there's so much. Well, we're farming in a protected landscape, but we actually haven't actually managed to actually get any help from the FIPL yet. Although we've applied for it, we didn't meet criteria. But has it been a benefit being in the national park?
It has. You weigh them out, don't you?
Yeah. Sure. Yes. We're waiting to make sure that the scales are balancing, and moving that along. Yeah, what else do we do with the national park? The national park really is more constrictive with planning than farming side of things. Although they like to see less sheep and more grazing with cattle and open spaces.
Yeah. So, I mean, on the planning front, with the deer processing, for example, what was that like as a process to get that off the ground?
And that fortunately wasn't my challenge, but I do know that they had the National Park wanted the deer processing units, but whenever we proposed where they wanted it on the farm, they went, no, can't have it there. And then you've got bio net gain, the BNG to come, and then, okay, now we've found a place you can put it. So it is inside a barn and it's doing very well where it is now, and it doesn't impact visually or anything really. So I think they're happy. Well, I know they're happy because they passed it and it's operational.
You've put a lot of focus onto restoring grasslands. Just on that word restoration, I suppose, what does that mean in practical terms? Just take us through sort of what you're actually doing on the ground.
Well, my thing is that Treborough Higher Court actually grows grass. That's the best thing it does. It doesn't actually grow wheat. It's not an arable farm. So we've been improving the grasslands and bringing back the soil to life and trying not to actually be detrimental to anything here. So I had a poor farmer who came in and he rented the ground with his cattle. And I said, they've got to move them. You can't overgraze it. I don't want all the grazing. They've got to move them. And last summer was the most challenging summer for everybody with obviously no water. And being where we are, we have limited water supply. Our borehole ran out and he had to keep bringing in water, and he was quite stressed about it. But the grass actually stayed good all summer, so his cattle did well. And I got what I wanted out because he kept moving them around when I wanted them to move. We actually looked at having, when we do have cattle, having electric collars so you can move them and do them on fences and keep them moving forward all the time.
You've got a fair amount of woodland as well on the farm. What's the current use for that and what are your plans?
So we've got some sort of deciduous mixed woodlands, and we've taken down about 7 acres of Sitka spruce and we'll replant that. And we've got another, I think, five or six acres of larch to go. But the total is probably around the 250 acres of woodland. Back in 2002, Mark had the idea of being 100-acre wood, and he created another 100 acres on the farm of woodland, which I'm sure seemed like a good idea at the time. But, so I always used to refer to him as it's Tigger and Pooh having their 100-acre wood up there. But yeah, so that's sort of relatively young woodland. So I'm not actually at maturity yet. And we're going to use it now as living barns, which everybody goes, what do you mean living barns?
I guess they go on.
The cows can go in there and they can get out of the elements. Therefore, you don't need to have your cows in barns as such with straw and keep them inside. So if they've got hay and access to something, they can go inside and get out of the weather. And it does have weather. Treborough Common is known for being very exposed and having a nice a variety of weather. When it's hot, it's really good up there.
But this summer was amazing. Yeah. It was perfect, really. I mean, yeah. It was just paradise. Nice.
Yeah, it was what I called the Goldilocks zone because we weren't too hot and we were cold.
Let's turn to the CHP plant. For listeners who don't know what this is, can you explain what it does and why it's an opportunity for you?
Mark, some 9 years ago or 10 years ago, found new CHP units, which will generate, each unit generates 45 kilowatts of electricity every hour from wood chip. So it's all virgin wood chip and it's not waste wood, but the stuff that you can't use for milling. So we chip that, we dry it, and then we burn it in these gasifiers, and they produce a gas called syngas, which then goes on to drive a V8 engine. And you put the wood chip in here, and then the pizza comes out over here. But it's a very complicated system of balance, but the company that made them got it sort of nailed to do this. Each engine appears to have its own personality, and it doesn't always work as you'd like it to. A friend of mine was working with us, and he said, I've tried sneaking out before they recognise that I've gone. And he said, I went on my hand. It's a bit like babies, and you think, if I crawl out, they won't know I've gone.
And in terms of the potential for that energy, what's it used for?
Well, we have an excess of heat. This is my next thing is to use the heat that we have excess heat of to do things like maybe drying grass. So you're not drying, because cut grass has a different feed quality to hay, doesn't it? Because you dry it very quickly. I think we used to do it historically, but we now don't tend to do dry grass. I quite like to. We're not really in a corn belt, so we can't dry corn. The other things is to be able to pump the excess heat into maybe a polytunnel, which is another challenge because of being in National Park. Won't be terribly happy if I say I want to put a polytunnel up here and grow like I don't know.
Avocados
or ginger. Actually, ginger is my favourite at the moment because I like eating.
Exmoor ginger, I like that.
Yeah. I think that if we could use this excess heat that we have and grow something with it rather than drying other stuff, it would be great. We talk about the maggots.
Yeah, to tell us about maggots.
Okay. Well, they're not the nasty little maggots that you get in your bin. They're the big maggots that you can actually, you put them in and you give them a really nice feed. And then like about 10 to 20 days later, you get like maggot poo on one side and you get the maggots and you can either crush them and freeze them and then they squeeze out the oil and the maggots themselves have got huge properties. And I think they go into feedstuffs actually in Europe, not here. You can't feed them meat here or anything like that. But it's the maggot poo I want, and it's called frass. But that is it's hugely good for the soil again. It's like a magic to the soil. And we want to make some compost, big compost, with my black gold.
Well, mass compost.
Mass compost, yeah. If I could afford a compost turner, we'd be making masses and masses of compost. But the maggots have to be cut at a constant temperature of, I think, 32 degrees. So that's where the electricity would come into it. So we could heat the units and keep them happy in the 32 degrees of heat and come out the other side. And then,
okay, that makes sense.
Abby and I went on an exciting farm walk. You can imagine going on a farm walk to go and see a maggot farm, can't you?
Yeah, it's a first on me. Although I was in I had a trip to Kenya back in October. And again, I mean, there we were talking a lot about fly larvae. We had a lot of visits to fly larvae farms and insects themselves, invertebrates are used a lot more out there. So, I mean, maybe we are going to see more of a shift towards that here in Europe.
The oil is more valuable than argan oil, and it goes into hair products. More people will be putting it than know that they're actually putting products with byproducts from maggots.
It goes into dog food, doesn't it?
Yeah,
as well.
It does, yeah.
So, it's one of those topics, isn't it, that we just don't necessarily, because they are what they are, we maybe don't want to talk about them, but the reality and the opportunity is there.
Brilliant for chickens. Brilliant for feeding chickens. It's a complete food for chickens and feeding fish.
Let's talk a little bit more about the national park, because, I mean, Exmoor, it certainly was when I was there. I think it must be one of the least visited of all the national parks, but it's an absolutely stunning part of the world. Tell us a little bit more about the national park itself as well, and make your case for why people should visit or not visit, I suppose, depending on whether you want them or not.
It's nice now, but in the summer, you definitely get a peak in the summer. With people coming, you're just, again, it's like tourists, isn't it?
Well, you're just,
oh, can you leave kind of thing. But I mean, the national park, you definitely get ups and downs. I mean, it's a beautiful place.
Yeah.
I couldn't think, like, anywhere else, it doesn't match it.
I don't think it does, actually, no. It's got such a variety of countryside, haven't we? We've got moorland, and then we've just got these rolling hills of grass and hedges, and
well, you've got sea to one side, don't you? You've got more.
Yes, it's got that coastline. It is a lovely national park, but not a very big national park. It's tricky, isn't it? Because of course you do want people to come and stay, but actually it puts a lot of stress on the infrastructures here when you do get lots of people. So if they want to go driving on down to Cornwall, you could have a select few diverted to Exmoor. Well, park, it is challenging to live in when, you know, we could probably get planning permission to make more holiday accommodation, but there are a limited number of people who want holiday accommodation. So you then go, well, really, we should be making it for living accommodation and not asking for more holiday accommodation, because it gets saturated.
So looking ahead, if we're looking 5-10 years ahead, and in many ways your journey is, it feels like it's right at the beginning, so and there are lots of these ideas still to put in place, but if we were to skip ahead 5-10 years, what would you want the farm to be doing? What would it look like? What would success look like for you, looking back on it?
For me, it would be having our own herd of Red Devons running through the farm, running through the woodlands, and then having a processing unit so that they are born and bred and left and leaving the farm, having not had any stress. Maybe doing pasture fed, trying not to do any concentrates with them, and just getting the story out that if you eat good stuff, it's a big benefit to eating for your body. That's my other thing, big crusade, is trying to make people understand it's what you eat is so important, and we shouldn't be eating highly processed or fast reared stuff, really. It takes time to make food.
What is it that drives you? What's your why for doing this? Why are you so determined to succeed with this?
We started it, Mark and I started this thing, because he hadn't farmed for ages, and I think he's got to the stage where he thought, well, I now got time to farm. It was really to be able to do the cattle well, do the beef well, and move the farm into being productive again, but regenerate the soils. He kept on going on about, I want to grow the soil. And one of the byproducts from our CHP unit is something which is very akin to biochar. So,
yes.
And the biochar is getting quite good press at the moment, that it's very good for the soil, and we produce this stuff. And I'm like, we need to get it back onto the ground and improve the soils, improve the diversity in the soils and plants. And move it forward.
I'm going to begin to wrap things up now. And I always ask the same two questions to everyone who comes on the show. So I'm going to ask you those now. The first is, if you had a message to the public, first of all, what would that be?
Well, we would want the public to understand that it's good food doesn't just come at a cheap price. I mean, what we're trying to say is we want people to understand that good food is nutritious and you've got to listen to your body. Put whatever you put into your body, there's a story behind it.
You've got to value food. I think the value of food has been quite lost, and that it's been so cheap for so long, and people have had free access. And now we need to actually go, we need to taste the food and actually appreciate the food. I think we've lost that. Maybe we've lost ours.
And your message to farmers?
Basically, good luck.
In a market where you don't know what you're going to get next week or even next month. So planning ahead is a nightmare. And there's no constant sort of like, well, it's going to return this. So, you know, I think is there a corn mountain and the price of corn has dropped, and then you've got the price of milk has gone up 25%, gone down 25%. That kind of element of farming is a nightmare. I don't know how you ride through that and predict what you're going to have at the end of 18 months or with prices on what you're going to make from it. I guess it's getting the story behind what you produce and making sure what we do is really good for both the environment and for the stock or what we grow, and not just go, I'll take the quick buck.
You're right.
Yeah. It should feel, yes, it should feel right. Good. It should feel good. It shouldn't feel
like a constant battle.
I like that. It should feel right.
I'm very naive. We're both naive still because we haven't actually done very much.
Probably delusional at the same time.
Yeah, probably. Yes.
Well, I think the way that you're feeling is important, isn't it? I think that's a good way to run on it. And actually running on from what you're saying as well, two other themes that really come through again and again, that theme of resilience, which you alluded to there, but also the real feeling that, yeah, that you are doing the right thing, that you're in it for the long term, as so many farmers are. That tomorrow is always here. You get through today, tomorrow will hopefully be better.
Yeah, well, when it's sunny and everything's going well, it is good, isn't it?
We will start to wrap that up now. But Sarah, Georgia, thank you so much for coming on the show. And absolute best of luck, honestly. It's really exciting hearing about everything you're doing, everything you have planned. Absolute best of luck.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Ben.
That is it for today. We will leave it there. But a big thank you to my guests, Sarah and Georgia Weatherlake, for coming on the show. Thank you also for listening. If you don't already subscribe to the show and you enjoyed this episode, please hit the subscribe button wherever you are listening and share this with another farmer, with someone else you know. Next time, we'll actually be in Kenya. We're heading to Kenya for the next episode. But for now, I'm Ben Eagle. This has been Meet the Farmers. And thank you very much for listening.